everybody, and welcome to That's Life, the show where we posted the route of the ING Marathon in Miami on our Facebook page, and we are totally psyched. Good afternoon, folks, and thanks for listening. I am Miriam L. Wallach, blogger, writer, general manager here at the Nachum Segal Network, and contributor on Fox Business. You can find me here every Thursday at 2 p.m., as I hope to bring you a little entertainment, a little news, and a little relief that the life you are leading is not nearly as wacky as mine. Coming to you from the home of the Nachum Segal Network, on the beautiful Lower East Side, I'm joined by my handy-dandy partner, Avrami. And while Avrami is busy working on a call to hook up our first interview, I want to give everyone an update about the birds, because I did get some emails and some Facebook posts about the birds. People wanted to know what the story was. As those of you who were listening last week know, birds got stuck in between the soundproof windows of the studio and the exterior windows of the building because it's cold outside and they nestled themselves in there. So, for the most part, all the birds are gone. All the birds escaped freely and healthily and whatever else, except for one. Very, very unfortunately, one sort of bit the dust a little bit. Avram, how's it going?
It's good. I named him Thomas.
You did? You didn't tell me that.
Well, you seem to be having a rough morning.
Yes, that is true. This is it's a rough morning and a very interesting day so far. I'll give you that much. I didn't realize, where did Thomas come from?
I don't know. I just came in and I looked at it and I just went, hey, Thomas.
Oh, all right. So now you're speaking to the dead bird. By the way, that's what we're at here right now at That's Life. We're talking to dead birds. If you are a new listener to the show, thank you for taking a break from your day to tune in. And if you are a returning listener, thanks as always for making us part of your show, your day. It would be my show and your day. That's fine. If Miriam L. Wallach, see, this is what I'm saying. If Miriam L. Wallach once a week is just not enough for you, do what Michali Treister does. Visit me in my blog at geothatslife.com. You can friend me on Facebook. Send me an invite on LinkedIn. You can shoot me an email, miriam@nachumsegal.com. I will not respond to you during the show. You know the rules. I'm not being rude. I'm just being honest, or maybe a little bit rude and still honest. But I will, please God, make sure to get back to you afterwards. Let's go to our favorite segment. By the way, if you think I'm speaking a little bit quicker than usual or more quickly than usual, I am, because we have a packed show and I need to get everybody in. So let's do some fortune cookie. Here we go. And actually, I think I'm going to do the crazy follows me everywhere story a little bit later in the show, just because for time constraints. Avram, how do you feel about that?
Whatever you want to do is fine with me.
All right.
You're in the driver's seat.
There you go. I love men who are amenable to my quick changes. Okay. Punctuality is the politeness of kings and the duty of gentle people everywhere. This could not be more appropriate since we are a little bit off our rockers here today. And Dr. Erica Brown, who's going to be joining us in just a few minutes, is going to talk about customer service, but not customer service as you would expect. Let's just do the national holidays. It is National Cut Your Energy Cost Day. So basically, we're sitting in the dark here in the studio. The only thing that is powered is the board. All right, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but I thought that would be good for the day. It's also National League of Nations Day. It is Houseplant Appreciation Day. Not sure how many houseplants are feeling unappreciated and how they posted or petitioned for their own national holiday, but give them a round of applause, I guess. I have no idea. But that also is second best to Peculiar People Day. So I'm thinking that the Peculiar People are the one who petitioned for the Houseplant Appreciation Day. That's the only thing I could come up with. It's also National Lose Weight and Feel Great Week. So if you think you need a diet, do it for 5 days, 7 days, because this week ends at the end of the week, and then you're good. Anyway, we will do Crazy Follows Me Everywhere a little bit later, because I desperately want to get to our first guest. I appreciate her waiting patiently. Dr. Erica Brown is a writer and educator and serves as a scholar in residence for the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington and consults for the Jewish Agency and other Jewish nonprofits. She was formerly the director of the Jewish Leadership Institute. She is the author of numerous, numerous books. Her latest book, called Narrow Places, Daily Inspiration for the 3 Weeks, is put out by Koren Publishers. She was a Jerusalem Fellow, a faculty member of the Wexner Foundation, an Avichai Fellow. She was the winner of the Ted Farber Professional Excellence Award and the recipient of the 2009 Covenant Award for her work in education. She has numerous degrees from Yeshiva University, University of London, Harvard University, and Baltimore Hebrew University. And you can catch her on her website, leadingwithmeaning.com. Hello, Erica.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me, Miriam.
Oh, totally my pleasure. It was your piece in the Jewish Week that really prompted me to reach out. Your piece in the Jewish Week last week, wasn't it?
I mean,
everything is blending. I don't know if you're having one of those days, but everything for me is blending. It was called Getting to Nordstrom's. Judaism is a great product. So why does our poor customer service get in the way again and again. I think I looked at this article originally and I'm like, wow, she knows exactly the Jewish, the Judaica store that I go to. But it wasn't a literal customer service in terms of going into a Jewish owned facility or storefront or whatever. It was about our greater treatment of each other from Jew to Jew and externally and internally.
That's correct.
It was a fantastic, fantastic, an eye-opening moment, I think, in terms of us as Jews needing to be more sensitive to each other, more welcoming, more honoring. But tell me how you found Nordstrom as a metaphor, which I thought was brilliant.
Well, thank you. It's interesting. In 25 years of writing, I would say I've had perhaps more response to this article than to any other.
Really?
And I think it touched a deep nerve for people about the way in which they're treated in Jewish institutions. If people get their information wrong on a fundraising call, or they're not thanked appropriately, or they feel that they walk into a synagogue, no one says hello, no one says Shabbat Shalom, they walk into a restaurant and no one pays attention to them. The feeling is that perhaps we need to use models from other areas and other industry and the for-profit world to understand a little bit better how to conduct ourselves within the nonprofit world.
And it's not just about politeness. It's not just about that. It's about a complete experience.
It's a complete experience. And Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart, said the goal of a company is to have customer service that's not just the best, but that's legendary. Mm. And when you think about that from really the founder of Judaism, Abraham, was known for his kindness to strangers. Strangers who ended up becoming angels to him, right, in terms of delivering good news. So I think that we don't treat strangers as angels. We treat strangers as strangers. And there are a lot of reasons we do that historically. But right now, it's hurting us. And people who work in the Jewish community, as good as you may be, if your entire culture is not warm, has a sense of institutional excellence and concern for every person who walks through the door, then it doesn't matter how terrific particular individual volunteers or professionals are, your institution will not have a reputation for warmth and friendliness. It won't be a place where people feel they belong.
It's an absolutely great point. And it brings me to the question of Chabad, because I would say that part of the Chabad model is that warm and welcoming and accepting and inviting, feeling and aspect towards every Chabad house, etc., that you find anywhere. Like, there's no one who's turned away. So is Chabad getting it right?
I think Chabad's been getting it right for a long time. I think not only in terms of the warmth and the welcoming and the outreach, but in terms of their understanding of the cost of Judaism and how to make it affordable and accessible to people who walk in the door. And I think also they understand the role of social media in doing effective outreach. I think they've understood it long before other Jewish organizations. I think part of our problem is that we don't learn from each other when we're doing it well.
That's very interesting. So the divisiveness, or I should say the separate little groups that we have, or, you know, to use a high school term, the cliques, mm-hmm. are not learning from each other.
They're not learning from each other, and I'm not sure that there are huge and positive examples to learn from without minimizing or diminishing the institutions that we have. Steve Jobs believed in Apple that he needed to go outside of the technology industry to understand how to sell an elegant and simple computer and make people love computers. So I think we have to also go outside of ourselves and look at models of customer service that are outstanding, the Ritz-Carlton, Nordstrom's, Target, L.L. Bean. Almost all of these institutions have books written about them or have their own books or have their own training. And perhaps we would do the best service that we can do to the products, quote unquote, that we have, is to get some outside training to understand how to just do this better.
You also mentioned Zappos in your article, which I thought was fascinating. I mean, you really brought over a number of different business models from major national brands and said, this is what we need to look like. This is what we need to sound like. And a number of your points at the second half of the article really made a tremendous amount of sense. But I think that one of our biggest problems is that we don't see ourselves as a product. We don't see ourselves as a business.
Right. We don't see ourselves as a business, and we're not a business in the sense that we work on profits with a PH rather than a profit with an FIT, and as we should. But on the other hand, just as Steve Jobs said, you learn how to conduct yourself better through studying what works in other areas, in other arenas. And I don't think that we've taken that seriously. Zappos did a remarkable thing. They convinced people to buy shoes online, which is pretty counterintuitive.
Right.
But they did that through incredible service. And one of the things that I learned most from reading Shay's book on Delivering Happiness on his product and his customer service is that your employee is also your customer. And if you don't treat your employee as a customer and don't create a very healthy, functional, kind, internal culture, then you can't expect the people who work for you to deliver that to customers.
That's a great point. That also speaks to your expect lateral service point on your article, where you write, expect lateral service. Everyone is responsible on some level for everything that goes on. If there's litter in the lobby, every person walking by should be invested enough to pick it up. And it's, you know, that's something I teach my kids. And that I try to teach my kids. Don't walk by it. We all live here. We're all a part of this house. And it has to be that we are all as committed to keeping it clean, to making it work smoothly, to making mornings go better so that we get on the bus without a scream and without a fight, that we all recognize that we are part of a team. It's not just mommy and daddy.
Right. Well, and that's so true. And I certainly will bring that back to my own kids because I try to stress that at home. I think part of it is when you know that someone else is going to pick it up, you have less incentive to do that.
Right.
And, you know, you might say we're all on the same team, but some people feel more responsible for the welfare of the entire team than others.
Mm.
And I've noticed this particularly in synagogue cultures, which have a welcoming committee or a chesed committee,
right,
kindness committee. And basically what we're saying is we're deploying other people to do something that we should all be on the front lines of. So someone walks in a synagogue, we're not waiting for a committee to welcome that person. We're saying, you know, we, since the days of Exodus, our responsibility, our legal responsibility to be kind to strangers emerges from our experience of being strangers ourselves. And yet so many people walk into our institutions and the first and sometimes the only person who greets them is a security person. Or we don't have someone who helps, who's particularly helpful on a telephone as a first-line receptionist.
Right.
So thinking a lot about that first encounter, as I wrote in the piece, John Nordstrom believed that you should tell you're in a Nordstrom, be able to tell you're in a Nordstrom's within the first 15 seconds. So what does the first 15 seconds of being in your Jewish institution look and feel like? And if it doesn't feel great for the stranger, it's certainly not going to feel great for the veteran. What can we do to change that initial welcoming and to sustain that sense of welcoming? Because as people say in the customer service business, customer satisfaction is worthless. Customer loyalty is priceless.
Right. That's it. That was a great point. I'm afraid to condemn my fellow New Yorkers, but is this a New York issue? Is this something that is endemic to, you know, New Yorkers and et cetera? I mean, I will tell you that the first Shabbos after Sandy hit the Long Island, the New York, New Jersey area, we headed out of town. There was no reason to sit around the destruction, and there was nothing waiting for us at home, and we left, and we went to D.C. People in the shul in D.C. could not have been nicer, could not have been more could not have been more welcoming. I mean, the president of the shul is coming over. I was in the door 5 minutes. 5 minutes before people came over to me to introduce themselves. And my husband finishes davening and he comes downstairs and says he got an aliyah. Now, there is something to be said for a smaller shul. I can tell you that the shul I daven in, we have 800 families. It's really, really hard to know who is new and who is there as a guest. So there is something to be said for that. But am I just condemning all New Yorkers and saying this is something we have a bigger problem with than outside?
I don't live in New York, but I do teach regularly in New York, and I have not found that to be the case.
Great. That's good.
I have found, so I'm glad that you found my city friendly, and I find your city friendly. Again, I think this has something to do with much more with the cultural norms, not only in the Jewish community, but in the world at large, because of the way that we communicate through social media and through through Facebook and texting, and mechanisms of communication that aren't necessarily full, that aren't necessarily face-to-face, that have allowed us to get away with not being as kind as we need to be. So we Jews have always been countercultural. It's been the source, I believe, of a lot of our intellectual success. And I think it's important to be countercultural here. I think, if anything, we need to be a model community and see ourselves that way. If you viewed yourself as, how do I really serve as a light to other nations and as a light and a shining light for my own people, how do I behave personally, individually? What responsibilities do I have when I'm in an elevator with a stranger, when I see someone in need, when I see something, a problem that needs to be taken care of? Do I just wait till someone else does it? That's part of the lateral service mentality.
No, it's a great point. You're listening to That's Life on the Nachum Segal Network. I'm Miriam L. Wallach, joined by Dr. Erica Brown, educator, author, and the brainchild behind leadingwithmeaning.com, which is a phenomenal, phenomenal website for those of you who are looking for more information. Her publications are out on Koren Publishers, and you have a new book coming out as well, correct?
I do. I have a book coming out through Koren again on essays on leadership, and I have a book coming out through Simon & Schuster for a general audience called Happier Endings, A Meditation on Life and Death.
I also thought that by... Oh, Rami just gave you a big smile on that one, there, on that title. There are two questions I have for you. Tell me why, and you're 100% right. Tell me why, when a Jewish telemarketer calls my house and gets my name wrong, I am angrier than when a secular telemarketer calls for another charity, I'm sure another worthwhile charity, butchers my name, and I take it for, and I, you know, take it in stride.
Well, I don't take any of those in stride. I find it irritating, and I find that fundraising in the Jewish community has become a competitive battlefield. Someone recently wrote about getting 2,000 pieces of mail solicitation from Jewish organizations alone in the course of a year.
That's harassment.
Well, it's not effective fundraising because it's also not personal fundraising.
Right.
But I think that gets exactly to your point, Miriam, which is, we all feel ourselves to be part of an extended family, and that's probably what peoplehood means, that you feel yourself part of a family with a larger sense of purpose. Well, you don't expect that a member of your family gets your name wrong, and we don't expect that a member of our family would get our names wrong. But I think part of it has to do also with the fact that someone is asking something of us, because we're a member of the family. Be responsible for the family, but we don't necessarily feel that they feel responsibility towards us to get our names right. And one of the things I stressed in the article is, people will not give to you as an organization simply because of the good work you do. There are so many organizations doing good work.
Right.
You have to stand out for something that's much more distinctive. And as we say in fundraising, people give to the organizations that love them the most. So where's the love?
That is such an important, important part, that need for donors to feel thanked, to feel welcome, to feel appreciated. You mentioned that in the article, that saying thank you seven times is what you're looking for.
Well, it's not what I'm looking for.
Not you per se.
One
but
of the
I'm
writers
saying,
on,
right, not you per se.
On fundraising, and this is research that's traveled far in the past few years, believes that you need to thank someone seven times. Now, obviously, that's not thank you, thank you, thank you, and you know we'll count off till seven.
Right.
That might mean the difference between a phone call, an email, a handwritten note. I think that we hear thank you, and the thank you isn't personalized. And because it's not personalized, we don't believe that it's actually being delivered to us. So, and very often, let's say within fundraising constructs, people thank us as a way of inviting us to give more money. So that doesn't really feel like a thank you. It feels like a solicitation, because it is a solicitation.
Right.
So finding ways to tell people in a meaningful way, I appreciate you. And perhaps we have to do it with some degree of exaggeration, because people feel remarkably undervalued.
I would definitely say that when I receive a letter back from, you know, my donation letter or whatever it is, your receipt and what have you, and then somebody takes the time to just write a thank you in script or with a pen or whatever it is, just knowing that somebody looked at it makes me feel better.
Right. Yeah, I think that's true. And I think we undervalue the importance of a handwritten note,
right,
of someone saying something of kindness and reaching out to us in small and significant ways. We don't know how we'll change the tenor of someone's day with a simple note of appreciation.
You know, it goes back to us as being communicators in the world of social marketing and social networking and doing everything via computer. You know, having a child sit down and write a thank you note is still a very valuable activity. It is a very valuable lesson to teach because it is something that will transcend into adulthood. And I recently received a thank you email from somebody for a bar mitzvah gift. And I was, I don't want to say offended, but I was a little surprised. I didn't realize that, you know, a lot of things have become more accustomed. A lot of things have become more acceptable. But I didn't realize that we had come to that point.
Well, I think it's the brave new world, and there we are. I actually disagree with you a bit. I mean, I think that it is, of course, important for children to write thank you notes, and certainly when they're receiving at a time of a lot of abundance, like a bar or bat mitzvah, it's important that children understand how to be appropriately grateful. I think that a lot of children do not grow into grateful adults. I think that writing thank you notes for your bar mitzvah might be, for some adults, the last time they seriously sat down to write thank you notes. And I think it's actually a practice that's more important for the writer than for the recipient, is to get used to on a daily way, and I always teach this when I'm training Jewish communal professionals, to keep a stack of personal cards, personal note cards, and stamps in your drawer. Make them easy and accessible.
Right.
It takes a minute or two to write a thank you note when all of your supplies are right there. And it extends far. It's a profoundly meaningful gesture for people, and it's one of those things that people don't expect today, which makes it all the more priceless.
My daughter was actually surprised when she saw me sitting down to write thank you notes to everyone who sponsored me as I run in the half marathon in a couple of weeks. Any person who posted or donated to Yachad on my behalf as a runner, I sat down and wrote a thank you note. Writing an email was just not going to be enough. And I decided it was more important for me to write something than to just, you know, call somebody. And that added effort was going to make a difference. And she looked at me and she's like, really? And I said, what? I don't have to say thank you? It's an important model. And I think that that's, you know, you speak to a very important point, is that it's one thing to instill a certain value in your kids or even make them do this, but allow them to understand that we need to continue this as a tradition and as a value even into adulthood.
Absolutely.
And that
and
is
in fact, today is House Plant Appreciation Day, so I think I'm going to write a thank you note to my plant.
Yeah.
I learned that from you, Marian.
Yeah, you know, I have to tell you something. Your plant says thank you. Anyway, Dr. Brown, Erica, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it. Thank you for joining us on the stream, and I hope you'll come back one day.
My great pleasure. I hope we all take this matter a little bit more seriously and spread a little bit more love. And today's a great day to start.
Sounds good. By the way, that should be Spread a Little More Love Day.
Okay. Spread a Little More Love Day to your houseplants and others.
Exactly. We're starting that today. Thanks so much, Erica.
Thank you, Miriam. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to That's Life on the Nachum Segal Network. I am Miriam L. Wallach, and we are quickly going to our next interview. Esty Ackerman, ping pong phenom from West Hempstead, made news last week when she sacrificed the opportunity to go to the finals because of Shabbos. For the sake of Shabbos, reads this Vuzesnaya's post, West Hempstead, New York, 11-year-old Orthodox Jewish ping pong player sacrifices win for the sake of Shabbos. Esty Ackerman joins us on the phone right now. She's actually in school. Esty, I'm sorry for making you cut class.
Oh, no, it's okay.
Well, I can't say you're that sorry. So you're a sixth grader from West Hempstead. How long have you been playing ping pong?
3 years.
3 years. And it was automatic, like love at first sight kind of a thing?
Yeah, well, my dad brought the sport into my brother and I, and we practiced, and we got a little bit good, and then we got coaching, and now we're at this point.
Yeah, this point is pretty incredible. So tell us what happened, because for those people who hadn't seen the post and hadn't read the article, they don't know exactly, you know, what transpired. So what happened?
So really, I was entered in many events,
mm-hmm.
and one of the events was a raging event, which was under 1,600, and it started Friday, and I advanced in my round robin group, which meant I advanced, and then I kept on playing some matches, and I won, and then that brought me to the round of 16, And then we checked our schedule, and we really saw that our next match was like 7 p.m., which was Friday night. So a Chavez for us.
So it was Chavez, and that was it. It was a black and white kind of clear-cut situation for you, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we try to talk to the referees, but, like, they can't really just focus on me. You know, like, there's another 800 players.
Right.
So it was really just hard.
So does that mean that the person you were supposed to play automatically advanced?
They automatically won. So, like, it said that I defaulted.
It said that you defaulted. How hard was that for you?
Well, of course, I'm disappointed. But, like, coming into this tournament, we thought that we might have this situation. But, like, we didn't know I was going to do this good.
That's very, very modest of you. But it sounds like you got really a lot of talent.
Yeah.
It's got to feel good to be that good at such a young age. Because the article also talked about that you've beaten other opponents who are, I don't know, three times your age?
Yeah, yep, that's correct.
Right, there was a 30-year-old that you defeated?
Yep.
How did that feel?
Well, it feels good. I mean, it's not the first time. Well, of course, like, there's people that always have a laugh when, like, a little girl beats, like, an older guy.
Right. I would have to imagine that not too many of your friends are lining up to play with you on a Shabbos afternoon.
No.
So just so that we understand, I mean, there are plenty of kids and adults who play ping pong Shabbos afternoon. Is that something you don't do necessarily?
Yes, that is correct. I mean, it's not like after like a Shabbos lunch after meal, like just going down your basement and like having fun with your children. No, it's really like getting into like your uniform and like going down and like playing serious.
Right. It's very competitive. So that's why for you, this was not Shabbos-tick.
Yeah.
I got it. Where were you and your family staying? This tournament was where?
This is in the Las Vegas.
Oh, it was in Nevada, Vegas, right?
And like they had a convention center, and then my dad researched like a kollel, which it's called Ava's Torah Center.
Mm-hmm.
And that is in Henderson, Nevada. And then like they hosted us by families, and then we went to, you know, shul, and we went for Shabbos lunch, and it was very nice.
Were there other from families there with you?
I mean, there's people that, like, daven at the shul, like, that's from.
Well, I'm saying, I guess my question is, have you encountered other from competitors your age, besides your brother?
From competitors, no. We are the only Orthodox people there out of around, like, 800.
Was there anyone during this entire conversation with the officials, et cetera, who looked at you and said, "Really? You're really not going to do this because of your Sabbath?"
I mean, people, I guess, like, they weren't, like, Jewish. So, like, people, like, we, like, don't get it how, like, to us it's really meant for, like, it's, like, important to us.
Right.
But, like, the day of rest. So, like, I mean, I guess they had other situations, like, with default, but, like, nobody has ever defaulted because of religion.
Or at least because of Shabbos. It might have been some other kind of religious conflict, but nobody's ever looked at them and said, "Listen, you know, sun went down, I can't do this anymore."
No, and not really, but, like, it is just really just a big Kiddush Hashem.
No, absolutely. I was just about to say, you have to be very proud of yourself. You know, it takes a lot of guts, Esty. It takes a lot of guts to stand up at any age, Kava Homer, even more so at the age of 11, not even bat mitzvah, and turn to somebody and say, "Listen, I can't do this. It's my Shabbos."
Yeah.
You have to be very personally proud of yourself.
Yeah.
And I have to imagine also your parents, you know, look at you and say, you know, "We've done something right."
Yeah. I mean, like, they were all so, like, cheering me on and, like, the whole round, and, like, we saw it and, like, we knew it, and, like, it was really just, really, like, no second thought.
Wow, good for you. Good for you. So what are your other interests? I mean, are you playing ping pong all day, or do you do other things with your friends?
I mean, first I go to school.
Right.
So, which is Heber County of Nassau County, which is a very, like, an amazing school.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's really no better. And so, like, I mean, I'm, like, normal. Like, I go out for recess, and then, like, I come home, I do homework, and then, like, I, like, play sports, or, like, I play ping pong, and, like, it's really fun.
So your training schedule, just so that people understand, what is your ping pong training schedule like?
It's really around 4 to 5 times a week, maybe like around 2 hours.
What, 2 hours each?
Like 2 hours like a day.
Wow, that's intense.
And we go to clubs and there's coaches and like training sessions.
And you also have a sponsor, correct?
Yeah, the sponsor is Killer Spin, and they also came to the tournament, and they've been really like supporting me, cheering me on.
And they understood when you had to forfeit.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, Esty, I wish you all the best. I can only imagine, by the way, that this is just this is not the last we have heard of you. That is for sure. I know you have prospects of being on the U.S. Olympic team one day.
Yep.
And playing ping pong for the United States. I think that is fantastic. And when you make that team, by the way, you will make time to be back on the air with me.
Okay.
All right. Is that a deal?
Yeah.
All right. Wonderful. Esty, much hatzlacha. Good for you. We're very, very proud of you.
Amen. Thank you.
My pleasure. I know. Esty Ackerman. It's pretty. I know. She's Esty Ackerman bringing tears to people here in the studio. You know, I did. Poor Naomi Nachman was not coming on so that she could be an emotional mess. We were going to talk about food, but she's shepping nachas sitting here next to me. Well, I'll give her a minute to compose herself because I did not share the crazy story that happened to me this week because we were pressed for time at the beginning of the show. And I know people are remiss from hearing if they don't get to hear the craziness that happens to me this week. So, or that happened to me this week. So I definitely will share. Last week, I alluded to the fact that I had vertigo last week. And it was a doozy. I'd never had vertigo before, and I had heard that it was very, very challenging and that it really is quite serious. And I experienced all of that. So my doctor, after visiting my doctor, he put me on a course of steroids. Now, let me tell you something. I was warned that I would be a complete insomniac, which I was. And even this week, I am still recovering because I cannot get enough sleep to make up for all the sleep that I missed. But more than that, I was eating like it was nobody's business. It was actually quite incredible that there was nothing around me that I didn't feel the need to inhale, to the extent that a friend of mine came over one morning, my friend Tamara, if she's listening, came over one morning and found me eating cold eggplant parmesan out of the fridge. And it was, you know, I know Naomi's making a face, insert grossed out face here. It was left over from my daughter's bat mitzvah. And I know, I'm telling you, it was not one of my finer moments. Anyway, Tamar comes in my kitchen and she looks at me, she says, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm eating cold eggplant parmesan out of the fridge." And she said, "I know. What are you doing?" I'm like, "I don't know. I can't stop eating." It's absolutely insane. We went out for dinner like 2 nights later with friends of ours, and whatever you put in front of me, I inhaled. It was absolutely incredible. I know, and everybody's wondering, so how much weight did you put on? Ironically enough, nothing. I know, not bad, right? Something to be said for steroids. Not only did they work, and they completely kicked the vertigo. God bless. Thank you, Dr. Rosenfeld. Within about 30 hours, I know, Dr. Rosenfeld, Dr. Heshy Rosenfeld in Cedarhurst, shout out to him. But not only did it kick my steroids, but I have not eaten that much in, I can't tell you how long, and I didn't gain a pound. So, you know, big props for the steroids. I know. It's not bad. At one point, I must have been like really like frenetic. And my husband looked at me and goes, "Do you want to just go pick up a truck or something?" He's like, "You have all this untold energy." I said, "I know, it's a little bit scary." Anyway, you are listening to That's Life on the Nachum Segal Network. I am Miriam L. Wallach, and I am joined by Naomi Nachman. Oh, hey, Naomi, what's going on?
Hello, how are you?
I thank God. I am so happy for you to be back. For those of you, by the way, who aren't familiar with Naomi, I don't know why, because not only is she a regular here, but she is her own personality. She is from Sydney, Australia. She's had her own TV specials on the Jewish Life TV network. She's been a guest host on QVC. She covers, how many things have you covered so far?
I don't know. I've lost count already. I really lost count.
Yeah, and you're a contributing editor to the Jewish Home.
A
regular contributor to The List, which is an insert in the Five Towns Jewish Times. Oh, no, that's gone. Oh, okay.
And a very sad.
Oh, sorry.
It's a little insert in one of the papers.
I didn't realize it was gone.
Yeah, about a year.
Really?
Yeah.
It's all right. People keep asking me what happened to The Standard. I'm like, we closed.
Yeah.
Why did you stop writing for The Standard? Because the paper is no longer.
Right. Wasn't there a fire there or something?
No. There was no fire.
Okay.
They went under.
Oh.
Right. The South Shore Standard went under. But most recently, somebody said, you know, I haven't seen the paper in a while. I'm like, right. because the paper's not being printed anymore. Hello. You got to wonder, by the way. You got to wonder sometimes about people. Yeah. Anyway, Naomi is joining us, not only because I love having her on and because she's entertaining and she's a friend, but more than that, because Shabbos lunch is getting complicated. And what I mean by that is that I'm looking for foods, and I reached out to Naomi. We're looking at foods to warm us from the inside out on Shabbos afternoon for Shabbos lunch that do not require a crock pot. Now, Naomi's not a crock pot fan.
I do make my challant in a crock pot.
Okay.
And I am pretty traditional that way.
But
I like, I've come up in the last year or so with like overnighting things in my oven.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm lucky enough to have two ovens.
Okay.
I have one in my basement, which is my Pesach kitchen, because Pesach's in like, I'm going to freak you
out. A minute.
72 days.
It's in a minute.
Place your orders with me.
Oh, nice. It's in a couple, by the way, it's not even a joke. Like, just total sidetrack. I just reached out to somebody about November. I'm like, please understand that Nachum's schedule is booking up and we're talking about November. And I'm like, wow, everything is around the corner.
It's
anyway,
very fast.
I know.
Everything's very,
very
early.
Fast.
Purim is next month. Okay. Purim is next month.
Right.
We haven't had Tu B'Shvat yet.
Right. But Purim is next month.
That kind of freaks us all out.
We're a funny people.
We haven't gone on yeshiva winter break yet. So,
right. There's a lot we haven't done yet, but everything else is around the corner.
And it's coming up fast. So I have, during the year, I use my Pesach oven, like to throw in a yapsik.
Oh, all right.
Okay,
so let's talk about the yapsik. Ah, Avrami's smiling at the yapsik.
I try to Google where the origins of yapsik is. Now, a lot of people have not heard it called yapsik. A lot of people in Borough Park have. So it must be like a Hasidish or Hungarian background.
And it's an overnight potato kugel.
So it's basically an overnight potato kugel. I actually wrote about it for the Jewish Home this week.
Oh, good for you.
So if you're in the Five Towns or maybe Queens, you can actually pick up a copy, or it's going to be on my website, which was down for about 2 months and now it's back up.
It had its chias amesim.
It had some issues, but it's all fixed up.
We know about website issues.
Yeah.
Oh, Rami.
I tried to research yapsik, so I didn't get too much on the internet.
I just
internet.
Spell it. Let's start with that. I don't
Y-A-P. This is how I spell it.
Okay, I'm going to Google it now.
Y-A-P. Uh-huh. I know I sound funny spelling things with my accent. Y-A-P-P-T-Z-I-K. That's how I spell it. Yapsik.
Okay, I want to know, I put in an H in there, Y-A-H-P-T-Z-I-K. Not only does nothing come up, but the only results I get have to do with Yahtzee. So I'm going to take that
Okay,
out.
Take out the H.
Yep, I'm taking that out.
Or as my mum would say, H.
Yapsuk.
Yapsuk, okay. See, Rega. Everyone depends on where.
Overnight potato cooker with flanken.
Okay, so this is what I was coming up with.
Party
so
like
I figured
stars.
It's really an overnight potato cooker. And I do have my next door neighbor, Ariella Gelbtuck, if you're listening. She has a sister-in-law, Lauren Gelbtuck, who actually makes her potato kugel, yapsik, with flanken, in her crock pot.
But really?
I've made it much simpler because I need my challenge.
Avrami does that also.
Oh, wow. All right. So we'll talk
really?
To you.
Wait, but do you make it? Avrami, put your mic on. This is intense. I don't understand something. You make it the same way?
Yeah. It's basically, it comes out as like chalent without the beans and stuff. It's the meat. It's the shredded potato or cut up potato.
Right.
Okay.
And then we put, and then onions. And then also, if people like kishka, my wife will chop up a kishka and line it on top. Well, it's
a right.
It's different. But it's Pesach chalent.
Right. People with kishka, they love it or they hate it.
Right.
Either way, it's one of those personal taste things.
And then, by the way, when your kids realize why it's called kishkas, it's good. It's great.
Yeah, that's but we make vegetable kishka. Started. We make vegetable
kishka.
We're
fine.
Not making it the real traditional way like my Bobby made it in Poland. But
because that's illegal, Naomi.
Right. So I actually do mine in a Pyrex dish or a 9x13
really?
Pan, my yapsik.
In an overnight?
Because I need my chalent in my chalent pot. So I don't want two chalent pots going.
No, that I hear.
Okay, so let me tell you how I make the yapsik, and then everyone will have their own variation.
Yes.
And Avrami can pipe in how he would do it differently in the
But you make both?
So I do. I do make both. In fact, the Shabbos I'm making both, and I'm going to tell you also what
do you
I'm
give
making
out chums? I mean, I have to imagine. No,
I'll tell you why I put what I put in my chalent, because we just found out that my husband, darling, has got high cholesterol. So I took out the flanken and I put instead, because you can't, to me, I know you're vegetarian, but to me, chalent is not chalent without meat.
No,
right?
I haven't had chalent in 100 years.
Nodding.
Right.
Okay, so I put in a smoked.
Wait a minute, time out. You're the guy who eats chalent from the ice cream, the pizza store.
Right, I could eat both.
The one on
I could eat both.
Flag on the plate.
I could
don't
eat
tell
both.
Me that. Don't tell me that chalent. You can't. You people can't.
Two
see
of
me.
The
Wait.
Best chalants I've ever had in my life.
Okay.
One was a cousin in Israel, and one is a friend of Nahum's who comes here, Sholi. Not the music Sholi, a different one. His wife makes it. Two of the best chalants that I've had are vegetarian.
To me, chalant without meat is bean stew.
You're a
potatoes.
Hypocrite, Avrami. Okay, Aunt Naomi, we are focused on you.
Okay, so I put in a smoked turkey drumstick. You can buy them vacuum packed.
Nice.
Full of flavor, packs a nice punch into the chalant. My parents in Australia put in smoked bones in the chalant, and it
what
is
are
amazing.
Smoked bones?
I don't
you
know.
You can't get them here.
You can't get them here. My mum's actually sitting in my kitchen in Woodmere. We could call her up.
Hey, Mum.
Hey, Mum. And they put in smoked bones. So I thought, okay, smoked turkey drumstick, which is a really great addition to the cholent if you're taking out the flank. And it's got so much flavor.
Right.
I, you know, try it on your guests, see what happens. It does splinter a bit, the bone.
Okay.
So you just, you know, you'll find some splinters of bone. But, you know, you're not going to, they're big. You're not going to choke on a little piece. You just, you know, go around it.
That is interesting.
But it's really delicious. So I don't want two chalant pots going. So my yapsik recipe is really easy. I buy my flanken from Costco. It's usually $7.99 or $8.99 a pound, the vacuum packed in the kosher department.
Not to talk about the $500 you spent on other things you didn't need in bulk, but okay, you got
the
flanken.
We got the flanken cheap, and I usually buy a few at a time. So I put, there's usually
flanken or short ribs?
Flanken. It says, I'm pretty sure it says flanken on it.
Are they the same thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. It just depends where you get it, right?
Right.
Like Midwest kind of a thing?
Or the way they cut.
Okay.
One's across and one's through the bone.
Okay.
Okay, so I buy it there. It's usually not so crazy fatty. I put two pieces of flanken at the bottom of a Pyrex glass dish at about 9 by 13.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the bigger rectangular shape.
Okay.
And then I go ahead and I make a potato kugel batter of a bunch of potatoes. I know it's hard to say. Depends how big your pot is. There's no quantity. Depends on the potato. I like Yukon Gold, my favorite. That's the ultimate potato kugel. I find it's like the Rolls Royce of potatoes. Others might disagree, but you know.
By the way, in the New York Times Magazine last week, there was a whole like ode to potatoes. He had Mark Bittman had like I don't know, like third, like you know, 10 different recipes.
Did he say which one was his preference?
He used different ones in different recipes.
Yeah,
but he did do a shout out to Latkes, which was nice.
Oh, woohoo! Yeah, I use Yukon for that.
Exactly.
So I use my Yukon potatoes. I put like 8 to 10. Through my food processor, and I do it on the, you know, there's a potato kugel setting, like a piece. It's not shredded. I have the Braun food processor, and it has it's not shredded. And I bought it at Sterling Electronics on Central Avenue in Cedarhurst.
Okay.
Shout out to them. And you know, there's like an S setting that you put in the white piece that sits on top. That's the shredder piece.
Okay.
So instead of shredding it and looking like stringy, it's like mushy. Because I like mushy potato kugel.
So it's the equivalent of somebody grating it by hand on like the finer.
Yeah. So it's really mushy. 4 eggs, 1 large onion, a tablespoon of salt, a little pepper. That's it. I pour that batter
on
over
top.
My flanken. I cover it. And no, I don't cover it yet. I bake it for 1.5 hours at 350 degrees.
Shoot. Yeah.
So I'm par cooking it right before Shabbos. So sometimes I'll do that on Thursday.
Okay.
Like,
smart.
I'll do on Thursday, put it in the fridge. Friday, an hour before Shabbos, I add a cup of water. Sometimes I'll add a cup of chicken soup.
Really?
Cup of water just to keep it from, you know, keep it hydrated.
Right.
Cover it very tightly with foil. Pop it in the oven in my basement or in my kitchen. Depends how hot or cold the day is. Like in winter, I don't mind having my oven on in my kitchen at 200 degrees. So it's very low. It's a low setting.
Interesting.
In a hot summer, I put it in the basement though.
Right. Yeah,
so
makes
now
sense.
It's different. And I put it in at 200 degrees. From lich benching till Shabbos lunch. Delicious. I never, ever have it left over.
Wow.
It is really, really,
it's so
really
funny
delicious.
How differently I do it. I use a cast iron pot and I brown the flanken in there first with no fat, no oil, no nothing.
It's got so much of its own.
Right. But then I put in oil after it's browned on both sides because you do need something
for the sides.
Right.
Yep.
For the sides. I put in some oil and then I shred, I don't know, 1,000 pounds of potatoes, right? Because for people who don't appreciate just how much it will condense, you've never seen anything like it. And, you know, probably 2 onions, let's say 3 or 4 eggs or whatever, matzo meal. Okay. And then I put the whole thing in, you know, put it on top of the flanken. I put it in my oven at 250 degrees, right before Shabbos. cover on it, right? The whole cast iron pot thing, that's it. And I take it out, you know, for lunch on Shabbos.
And, right, you lick it clean.
Right. And,
clean.
Of course, because if you're a person who likes crust, ugh. I mean, right. That's it. We're all nodding. We're
crust,
all nodding.
Crust.
If you like crust, this is the way to go because there's nothing like the crust of a cast iron pot. And it's funny because I would never even think about keeping, doing it in a Pyrex. But Pyrex, I mean, it's also got to clean beautifully. That's what I love about the cast iron pot.
Or oven, any oven to tableware dish.
Right. But not a tin. Wouldn't you agree?
I've done it in a tin.
Really?
You're a rebel. Cooked it for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Put it in the freezer.
No.
And used it like 2 weeks later.
No way.
I use it for Pesach.
Are you serious?
I'm telling you, I use it for, it's my Robbie, Pesach cholent, and now Pesach's coming up, and literally we're joking about me taking orders, but this is one of the things on my menu, is an overnight potato kugel, and I make it, and everything I make is frozen fresh, I put it in the freezer, all you have to do is heat it up. This, you once it's defrosted a little bit, you pour a cup of water on it.
I am.
On Pesach, 200 degrees. It is fabulous.
I am fascinated.
Yeah. It's a great little find that I came up with. I'm very happy.
That's pretty. Well, you know, we got to regroup for a second. You're listening to That's Life on the Nachum Segal Network. I'm Miriam Alwal, joined by the genius Aussie gourmet. I mean, there's no other word. The genius Aussie gourmet, Naomi Nachman.
Blushing.
And by the way, we could have done an entire hour on Yopsik.
Oh, now let's talk about.
We are so stupid that we didn't think about that.
The overnight pastrami.
Oh, yeah. By the way, Aframi, before he yells at me, how much time do I have left before we talk about pastrami? Because, you know, this is an ongoing issue. Oh, shoot. 9 minutes before the song? 9 minutes before my outro? All right, Naomi, we got to... Oh, my... Oh, really? Oh, shoot. All right, Naomi, we gotta get moving
here. So we're talking about foods that warm us on Shabbos afternoon.
Right, and now
you know,
we're going
come home and it's a little cold coming home from shul.
Yeah,
we peel off our Uggs or our whatever shoes we're wearing and our coats and we need something hot to eat. So we've got our yapsik for our meal.
Okay.
I also make, and I make it this week because my parents can't get this in Australia and I want to show off to them a little bit, and a pastrami overnight in the oven.
Okay. That's the one with the water, right?
Right.
The water bath?
So yeah. What do they call it in French? Bain Marie.
Yes.
Let's be technical in French.
And by the way,
sound like we know what we're doing.
You're speaking French with a heavy Australian accent.
Everybody makes fun.
No, it's pretty entertaining. I got to be honest.
When I speak Hebrew, my Hebrew accent sounds more Israeli.
Really?
Than an American. Yeah. I don't know why the Australians, we get it.
Did I tell you about a friend of mine from Woodmere who married a guy from Australia? They live in Ramat Beit Shemesh and they're surrounded by...
Aussies?
No, South Africans. And the kids do not sound like they come from anywhere. you cannot figure out where these kids are from.
They get mixed up accents.
It's a complete foshla. Anyway, okay, overnight pastramis.
Okay, so I buy mine at, you know, Seasons, sometimes Gourmet Glatt. I was just actually yesterday, I spoke to Levy Barron at Seasons. He's the butcher in Lawrence. He's the head guy that runs the meat department. And I always ask him to pick me out a nice piece that's not too fatty because, you know, traditionally pastrami is very fatty.
Right.
And a navel pastrami, which is what it's called, is usually quite fatty.
A navel pastrami?
A navel pastrami.
You know what? That's too much information.
Okay. I don't think it's really the belly button.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know why he calls it that, but it's called the navel pastrami.
Yep. TMI. Yep.
Okay. So he gets it. He... You know, pastramiizes it for me, you know.
And then he puts it in a
vacuum pack.
Right. People don't understand that. You're not looking for a chunk in the deli counter. It has got to be in a vacuum pack.
And it's also cooked already. It's cooked through.
Right.
It's not raw pastrami.
Right.
So you could, you know, I was discussing with him yesterday and he said, you know, it's already cooked. You could use this in a corned beef sandwich. Not a corned beef sandwich. In a hot pastrami sandwich right now. Heat it up and put it in a sandwich right now.
Genius.
You know, so, you know, it has multi purposes. But, so when I just don't want people to get confused when they buy it. Sometimes it's got a second layer of wrapping around it. Sometimes it'll have a Meal Mart out of packaging wrapper.
Okay.
So just take off the outer
wrapper.
Can
you say wrapper one more time?
Wrapper.
Thank you.
Let me say it in American. Wrapper.
That doesn't get old, by the way.
So
go on.
I take off the outer wrapper and then I'm just left with a meat inside the vacuum pack. I put that in a tin or a 9x13, you know, tin pan or... a Pyrex dish, depends how many Pyrex dishes I've used over Shabbos, if I have a spare one, because I love oven to tableware.
So do I. I'm a big fan.
Love it. And very good and very great cheap prices are at, the name is eluding me.
Amazing Savings?
No. I like their stuff too. Oh, Home Goods Store.
Oh, by the way.
So cheap.
That's where I got my cast iron pot. You know how expensive a cast iron pot is?
Yeah, hundreds of dollars.
Right. I went there at Home Goods.
You find great buys. Beautiful dishes. $6.99.
Right. Well, by the way, so much of my Pesach is from Home Goods.
Yeah. Definitely. It's coming up. And Target also has some nice stuff also.
Yes.
But not as cheap as HomeGoods.
Not, so. Who and knew not that Target pretty. Could be expensive?
I know.
By the way, that's the litmus test. When you have found somewhere that makes Target look expensive. Yeah.
So
it's all good.
Yeah. So you put your pastrami in the vacuum pack in the 9x13 pan. You put about half the pan with water, and then you cover it tightly with foil. And when you put your potato kugel in and your yapsik in the oven, it all goes in right before lich benching
right.
at 200 degrees. But can I just say one thing about this potato kugel?
You can say whatever you want. Yeah.
Sometimes I don't even put in the meat. I will overnight a potato kugel now with just the water. And no meat. You know, I put the water on top, regular potato kugel, even a bought one I once did.
Really?
Yes, what? I once bought a potato kugel. Don't. I know.
Blasphemy.
I know, don't make fun.
Blasphemy.
I know. But I was in a hurry and someone was sick. I think my husband had eye surgery.
Explain to me what you did.
So you take a regular potato kugel.
Yeah.
You can pour a little water over it.
Okay.
Cover it tightly and put it in the oven overnight, lich benching, exactly how you would the flanken. It's just got no flanken at the bottom. It's really good. It's really good.
I am stupefied.
It's amazing. And this the pastrami and the flanken, I've even put pastrami at the bottom of my potato kugel. So when you get to underneath, you get to the instead
but it
of
doesn't
flanken,
have the plastic.
Pastrami. Doesn't have it. No, it's already opened up.
Okay. Yeah, people need
right.
to understand
Very good
that
point.
Part.
Yes,
yeah.
definitely.
Because mm-hmm. otherwise we're getting a whole bunch
for
of
some reason
calling
I've had
Monday.
Some leftover pastrami or something. I think I once made it on a Sunday night. I had leftover pastrami for dinner.
This is what's going on, by the way, at the Nachman's house. Naomi's making fresh pastrami on Sunday nights. FYI.
I think it was at the Sunday night. So I took leftover pastrami and I poured potato kugel batter over it and I baked it for 2 hours. It was delicious.
And then you froze it and served it next week.
No, we ate it that night
Okay,
for
fine.
Dinner.
I didn't know how much freezing was going
nah,
on.
Nah. We ate it that night for dinner. It was really delish.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, throw pastrami in some stir fry also. Stir fry vegetables.
I put pastrami, if I'm making, how much time do we have, Avram? I'm getting nervous now. I'm getting nervous.
I'm getting hungry.
4 minutes?
Okay, you wrap up.
Oh my gosh.
I'll be quiet.
This is crazy. All right. We're regrouping. I have to be an adult. I just want to say, though, that sometimes for an appetizer on Shabbos, I will just make a deli salad of hot pastrami with, you know, like a salad with like a light vinaigrette. Boom, done.
Yum.
Right, whatever. Big hit. It's, I don't do it with the turkey, though. I don't like warming the turkey and putting it on the salad. For some reason or another, it's got to be the pastrami.
Yeah, there's something about pastrami.
Right? And by the way, the vinaigrette has to have some mustard in it because then you got the mustard with the pastrami. Mm. Yeah, not bad, right?
I love it.
Yeah, there we go. All right, Naomi, you're always a pleasure to have
Thank
on.
You. This is fun. I'm starving.
By the way, I was about to say I need a snack. Anyway, Naomi Nachman, thank you for joining me. AussieGourmet.com. Her website, The Aussie, 2 S's, TheAussieGourmet.com. The website is back up. It's at its chias amesim. It should continue to be healthy and have much hatzlacha. And you got to get your Pesach orders in because you don't realize, but if you haven't bought shmura matzah yet, you're late, right?
That's I believe so.
Yeah, that's basically the message. Start cooking now. Anyway, you've been listening to That's Life on the Nachum Segal Network. I'm Miriam L. Wallach, and Avrami Telsma, we are out of time, and he's in charge, so we are out of time. Let's go through the lineup for the rest of the day so you know what to expect and what not to miss. Randy follows this show with something to talk about. That's Randy Wartelski. Followed by Rivka Abbey. Don't miss Rivka Abbey's teen spirit. She is a phenomenal, phenomenal host. Then at 5 p.m., the OU presents the Jewish Reaction with Ellie Hagler. I haven't talked about Ellie Hagler the entire show today. I know, I usually do. Shout out to Ellie Hagler. He was on this morning at JM the AM with Nachum. And as always, he is a phenomenal guest. He's becoming a regular around this network. We like having him around. Anyway, The Stunt Show, hosted this week by Shim Kramer. With The Stunt Show, you never know what you're going to get. Thursday Night Extravaganza on from 7 to 8, followed by Spin Class, Politics with Michael Fragan, and an all-new presentation of The Book of Life with Charlie Harari at 9 p.m. As always, we close out our Thursday programming with an Hour of Jewish Soul brought to you by Charlie Bernhout. Join Nachum tomorrow morning from 6 to 9 as he hosts JM in the AM and is joined by Malcolm Honlein. You don't want to miss that Erev Shabbos update as to what's going on in Israel. I have a feeling they will talk somewhat about the storm. Don't miss Saturday night. Saturday Night Segal, hosted by our one and only Avrami, live here at 10 p.m. on the stream at NachumSegal.com. JM Sunday with Matis Weingast this Sunday and every Sunday from 7 to 9 only on the stream. And what better way to start your week than with the Israel Show? 9 a.m. Monday mornings with Mayor Weingarten. Please make sure to like their Facebook pages and all the Facebook pages here at the Nachum Segal Network because, frankly, we like to be liked. This show will be rebroadcast Sunday at 1 p.m. on the Nachum Segal Network. I would like to thank my guest, Dr. Erica Brown. You can find her on her site, leadingwithmeeting.com. You can find her books on corinpub.com. That's Corin Publishers. Their website is corenpub.com. Also, my thanks to, and much hatzlacha to Esty Ackerman with her ping pong endeavors, and she should continue to be a light to Klal Yisrael. And as always, Naomi Nachman, the AussieGourmet.com. Read more about Yapzik this week in the Jewish home. You can get it in Nassau County, you can get it in Long Island, you can get it in Queens, and I'm sure you can probably get it online also, correct? Absolutely. I want to thank everyone again who has sponsored me. We have way surpassed my Team Yachad sponsorship level. I really appreciate it. I know you're looking at your watch. $3,600. Thanks to everyone. And if you would like to continue to support Team Yachad, any one of the runners or myself, go to teamyachad.com, click on Miami, and give what you can. I leave you today with a selection from Hask 24, a time for duets to make sure that you all know about the Hask concert coming up this Sunday. Go to haskconcert.net. I am not sure that there are tickets available. It sells out every year. Hask 26, you wouldn't want to miss it. This, what are we listening to? Hashivenu. It's a duet by Ohad and Yehuda Green. Fantastic, fantastic duo. Anyway, that's life, everybody. Go home and make your yapzik. Bye, guys.
Ine yomim bohi, ine yomim bohi neum Hashem.
Ano avi oimer, ine yomim bohi neum Hashem. The hunger will not be for bread,
and the thirst will not be for water.
Vishlachti rohboretz loy rohob lalechem veloy tzomo.
Hashiveinu
Hashem Eilecho, Hashem Eilecho Venoshuvo.
Hashiveinu
Hashem Eilecho, Hashem Eilecho Venoshuvo.
La 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 השם מלכו ונושובו, אוי השיבה.